Okay. Good afternoon, everybody. I have something to say here. First, I was told that people stop talking. So, for the sake of your progress, please keep silent. When you talk, you disturb other people. And as you said, as you know, the sleeping quarter is very small. When you talk, other people are disturbed by you, and people get annoyed by you. And if everybody practice with angry mind, then the energy is very bad for everyone. Okay? Therefore, for the sake of your own progress, please keep silent and think of others as well. Okay? And there are a few points from the interview just I want to share with you. This is concentration practice. Our retreat is concentration practice. And in my first night, I talked about how to practice systematically until the light comes. In fact, I don't have intention to talk about the light. Because when I talk about the light, and when your mind start to become quiet, your mind become very anxious. Is the light coming or not? It's coming. So you practice with expectation. And this expectation will hinder your progress. So I always consider whether I should talk about the light in the first Dhamma talk or not. However, after struggling in my mind, I decided to talk about the light, knowing that some people have already seen the light. And also, as a teacher, I have to make it clear the whole process of practice, because if I do not make it clear, then when you go back home and if you continue your practice and you see the light, then you will get frightened. You don't know how to handle with it and you think it's imagination. Then if you are not sure about your practice and you ask somebody else who have no experience of light before, he will say, you are crazy. If 10% say you are crazy, then you will end up in psychiatry hospital. This is what of the yogis wrote to me, her experience. Because she says she sees the light, brilliant light, and there's no self, no, and body very light, like floating in the air. And she has no appetite to eat because of pity, joy. But she doesn't know what, she doesn't understand this experience. So she related her experience to other people who have no experience. And everyone say, you are crazy, you are crazy. Finally, she end up in psychiatry hospital. So remember this painful experience, I always mention light in my retreat. Because I don't want you repeat the same mistake as her. But the disadvantage is when you know, ultimately, when the concentration goes deeper, you will see the light. So, unconsciously, when your mind becomes quiet, your mind is always expect the light to come. That is the disadvantage to tell you the light. So now you know it. Please check your mind. This practice is like hatching, like a hen hatching the eggs. A hen sit on the eggs.
Hen on the eggs.
A hen.
Hen on chicken.
Sit on the eggs. It must chicken must make sure the eggs are well covered and well nurtured. Only then, the chicks will break the shell and hitch properly. So your duty is to sit on the eggs, make sure the egg is well nurtured, and whether the chicks comes out or not, that is not your concern. Okay, your concern is just sit on the eggs, make sure the eggs are well nurtured. If you can make sure this point, then the Dhamma will take care itself. You don't have to worry whether the chicks will come out safely or not. As long as you sit properly on the eggs, give enough heat, momentum to the eggs, then the chick will hatch properly. So remember your duty. Just sit on the eggs enough. Constant sit on the eggs and give momentum to your practice. And whether the light comes or not, you don't have to care about it. Because when everything, when the conditions are ripened, the light will come. When conditions are not there, the light will not come. So if you practice with expectation, hoping the light to come, you are practicing with self, ego. I want this to happen. I want this to happen. This practice based on self. And the Dhamma is not self. The Dhamma is cause and effect. When the causes are there, the effect will arise. When the causes are not there, the effect will not arise so soon. So please forget the light. And also, sometimes when a person, a yogi, has one good experience, and he becomes very excited. Wow, I'm reaching the goal. He becomes very excited and with strong expectation and enthusiasm and great effort, he sit and his meditation become the worst. Because the mind is no more pure. The mind is no more calm. The mind is anxious. The mind is full of expectation. Therefore, whatever good experience you experience or bad, the worst experience you experience, the moment it finished, forget it. The best way is after your best experience. In the sitting meditation, after the best experience, then tell yourself, impermanence. Next sitting, it may not come back again, or it may come back again. Who knows? We do not know. So don't cling to the good experience. The more you cling to the good experience, you will end up in disappointment. Because this Dhamma is not act according to your expectation. When the time comes, it comes. When the time is not there, the light, your good concentration will not come. So don't get disappointed with a bad experience or worse sitting, and don't get too excited with good sitting. Especially for beginning, few days, when your concentration is not stable yet. It's always up and down. Up and down. And if, let's say, if we have 6 sitting in a day, and accidentally you got 1 very good sitting, you should be content. Content with your progress. You know, even me, a once meditator, I cannot have good sitting all the times. Not possible. Because hindrances easily comes. Okay? So once you have good sitting, feel happy. Delight in it. That's all. Then the next one, the same good sitting will never come. But tomorrow it may come back. One of my students, that's many years ago, after 5 days, he experienced the nimitta like a magnet sucking his mind in it. The mind is go into a nimitta. And he gets so frightened. he gets so frightened, he pulls himself out from this good state. Then he wants to see me very anxiously because he thinks something wrong with his meditation. Then I say, it's very good. Your experience is very good. You should let your mind go into the nimitta. Oh, then he realized, okay, he said that, okay, tomorrow I will do it. However, tomorrow the experience never come back. Then the second day, he said, no, I want to do it. I want to let the mind enter into nimitta. The second day still not come back. So he end up with disappointment. Finally, he give up. The moment he give up, the experience comes back. So this experience tells you that you just cannot expect anything. When it wants to come, it comes. When it's not, you expect that you can do it. Dharma is not like that. So you just sit on the eggs quietly, continuously, consistently, give enough heat to the eggs, then the chicks will break the shell and come out safely. Okay? Okay. Then this is concentration practice. In the first day, I want all of you to be aware of the breath all the times. However, I know this is very difficult for many people because everybody has their own emotions. Sometimes aversion comes, sometimes irritation comes, so the mind cannot be aware of the breath anymore. Therefore, I want to share with you another way of dealing with your emotions, especially when there's a group of people, like in the kitchen or in a sleeping quarter, when you know somebody annoy you unintentionally. So if there's any emotions arise in your mind, there are two ways to deal with it. One is to arouse your compassion for the person who annoyed you. I don't think he purposely want to annoy you. Sometimes it's he can't help himself or herself. So instead of letting defilement to overwhelm you, please transform your mind. Arouse compassion for this person. Compassion thought, the thought of compassion is very soothing, and it can heal your body as well. Especially it calms down your defilements. This is one way. The second way, when the mind gets annoyed, please watch your refinements. Instead of finding fault in others, why not take your refinements as object of observation? Direct watch it. Watch the refinements. Let's say agitation. Watch it, agitation. Contemplate it as cause and effect. Contemplate it as impermanent, not mine, as cause and effect, then let go of it. Only then your mind can quiet on the breath. If you do not get rid of this refinement in the mind, your mind cannot settle down on the breath. So you can mix little bit vipassana way to deal with your refinements. When the refinement has gone, then you can come down quietly, or the mind can settle down on the breath. And also, during the eating, I think sometimes the greed may arise. A lot of greed may arise. So watch your mind also. Watch the reaction of the mind towards your senses. Whatever come into the senses, then watch the mind. Other time, when you sit quietly, you watch your breath. But when there are too many movements, you feel that you cannot follow the breath, then watch the reaction of the mind toward the senses. Eye, ear, nose, tongue, body. So you can practice two now. One is watch the reaction towards the senses, and the other one is watching the breath. Okay. These are the two things I want to share with you. Okay. Now I shall continue my talk. Now we come to the fourth contemplation. What Ananda is contemplation of disadvantage or danger. Here, disadvantage or danger, Buddha refer to body. What is the danger of the body? Here in Ananda, a monk having gone to a forest or to the foot of a tree contemplates thus. Many are the sufferings, many are the disadvantages, dangers of this body. Since diverse diseases are engendered in this body, such as the following: eye disease, ear disease, nose disease, tongue disease, body disease. Okay, before I finish all the disease, if you know, during Buddha's time, when the monk, when they listen to the talk, they can be enlightened. They can gain enlightenment. Why? Because while listening to the talk, then they follow the instruction and start to contemplate. Therefore, so when I tell you eye disease, you should quickly contemplate eye disease. Only then, your insight will grow. Don't just listen only. When I say eye disease, you should quickly contemplate, oh yes, eye disease, and think of many, many diseases come from the eyes. Then ear disease, you quickly contemplate according to what Buddha said. This is how the monk can gain enlightenment while listening to this course. So don't listen to words only. Use your insight to penetrate what the words try to convey. Okay? So, eye disease, ear disease, nose disease, tongue disease, body disease, headache, mouth disease, tooth, ache, cough, asthma, heartburn, fever, stomach pain, dysentery, leprosy, boils, consumption, ringworm, diabetes, cancer, and disease originating from bile, from phlegm, from wind, from changes of weather, from adverse condition, from result of karma. Sometimes when we come to practice, a certain unwholesome karma we perform in the past may happen that hinder your process, that hinder your progress in a retreat. For example, sometimes you may, get hurt or get injured during the retreat. So this is called the result of past karma. So you just have to bear with it. And sometimes during the retreat, your mind gets very annoyed and you think of wanting to leave. This is called the evil, the Mara. The Mara is trying to attack you. And if you follow your desire, want to go back, then Mara gets access to you. You must know this Mara is trying to play trick with you. Don't follow the Mara. Okay, and the cold, heat, hunger, thirst, excrement and urine. Thus he dwells contemplating disadvantage and dangers in this body. This ananda is called contemplation of disadvantage. So you keep the body, you contemplate this body, whatever this is, just think of it constantly or contemplate it repeatedly until you get disenchanted with the body. Because we have a lot of attachment to the body. We attach to the body and to the mind, both. But to get disgusted with the mind is not easy. But to get disgusted with the body is more easy, especially for women. So this is the way to contemplate the danger of the body, to get disenchantment with the body. This is one of the insight. Okay, next one. The fifth contemplation. And what ananda is contemplation of abandonment. Herein ananda, a monk does not tolerate a thought of sensual desire that has arisen in him, dispels it, makes an end of it, and annihilates it. He does not tolerate a thought of ill will that has arisen in him, but abandons, dispels it, makes an end of it, and annihilates it. He does not tolerate thought of cruelty that has arisen in him, but abandons it, dispels it, makes an end of it, and annihilates it. He does not tolerate evil, unprofitable states that arise in him from time to time, but abandons them, dispels them, makes an end of them, and annihilates them. This ananda is called contemplation of abandonment. This contemplation is very important. Without dispel all this sensual desire, ill will, or evil state of the mind, to achieve concentration is impossible. Therefore, we must know how to dispel it when they arise. Okay, first Buddha mentioned a thought of sensual desire that has arisen in him. Why sensual desire arise in a person? How a sensual desire arise in a person? Either in a man or in woman. Sensual desire arise from the contact. From the contact of six sense bases with six sense objects. For example, the eye, the man's eye, come to contact with a beautiful woman, then sensual desire arises. Without seeing the beautiful woman, sensual desire does not arise. Therefore, sensual desire arises from the contact of six sense spaces with six sense object. This is one of the reasons. There are few reasons. So, to avoid sensual desire arise due to contact, Buddha advised us to practice guarding of the sense door. Guard your sense door. Guard your sense door. Guard your six sense door. How to guard? Close the eye, close the ear? No. Close the eye, close the ear, then the blind, the deaf, can guard the sense door very well. Buddha doesn't mean that. Buddha means guarding the sense door means keep your mind, there are two ways to guard one's sense door. The first one is called gochara sampajanya, clear comprehension of pasture, pasture, P-A-S-T-U-R-E, pasture. So what it means, clear comprehension of pasture. Gochara sampajanya means that you keep your awareness, keep your attention on a single object of meditation. Let's say breath. So when you walk to the kitchen, okay, there are many people, you know, sometimes the mind get very irritated or agitated without guarding the sense spaces, without guarding your sense door, your mind will get affected by others. So before you walk into the kitchen or to the dining hall, keep your mind on the breath. Whatever happens, you just pay attention on the breath. So your eye cannot see very clearly. What dishes also not clear to you. What people tell also not clear to you. Because your mind is with the breath. When your mind is with the breath, the defilements cannot enter to your mind through the eyes. The defilements cannot enter your mind through the ear, through the nose, through the tongue, through the body, and through the mind. Because your mind is fully stay with the breath. This is called guarding the senses. Gochara sampajanya. Clear comprehension of pasture. The second way is clear comprehension of non-delusion. So whatever your senses, whatever come to your senses, you just contemplate impermanent, impermanent, impermanent. The taste, you taste good, impermanent, impermanent. The sitting, you feel good, impermanent, impermanent. Aversion arises, impermanent, impermanent. Anxiety arises, impermanent, impermanent. This is called clear comprehension of non-delusion. So, if you practice these two ways, then the sense desire cannot arise in you. Okay. And another reason why sense desire arise in you because of unwise attention. Ayoniso manasikara. Unwise attention. For example, when a man's eye come to contact with a beautiful woman and he keep on paying the beautiful part of the woman, this is called unwise attention. Because he keep on look at details of this beautiful woman, therefore sensual desire arise in him. This is called unwise attention. So in order not to let sensual desire arise in a man, you should pay the ugly part of that woman, not beautiful part. So yesterday we have learned 32 part already, right? Yesterday we learned 32 part, head, hair, body, hair, nail, urine, liver, one by one. So when you look at a beautiful woman, you should just head, hair, body, hair, nail, tea, urine, you know, saliva, one by one, until your sensual desire subsides in you. This is how you can overcome the sensual desire. It may not be important for you as a layperson, but it's very important for monk. So, therefore, this is highly recommended. All the monks must practice this 32 part. Because when the monk, they go out, every day they go out begging food. When they go out to the street, the eye always encounter with many beautiful objects, many beautiful women waiting to offer him food. So if he did not guard his senses by concentrate on one, let's say breath or other meditation subject, or he did not practice 32 parts, and when his eye come to contact with beautiful girl, then the whole day his meditation gone. is just lingering on that beautiful girl, how to maintain his monkhood. Therefore, he have to, when his eyes see the beautiful woman, he just hit hair, body hair, nail, teeth, skin, one by one, recite until the last one, and the last go away. This. So Buddha say, when you pay attention unwisely, you only see the beautiful part, then the sensual desire which has not yet arisen will arise. And when you pay attention to the ugly part, repulsiveness or foulness of that body, opposite sex body, then the sensual desire which has arisen will go away. So this is called wise attention. So then Buddha said, when sensual desire that has arisen in a person, you must dispel it. Try your way, like 32 parts or skeleton meditation. Talk about this skeleton meditation, I would like to share with you one story. I have told this story many times already, but my audience keep on changing, so I have to repeat again because this story is very inspiring. I have one, there's one minister, who was Buddhist, and one day my friend introduced him to me. Then he asked me a question. He posed a question for me. He said, "Sister, every time when I went to cut my hair, in barber shop." There are many beautiful hair stylists wearing very short skirt and moving in front of me. He said that my mind was obsessed by lust. And he said, "Sister, I have to tell you very frankly, as a man, we are very lustful." We are very lustful. So I struggle very hard to control my lust. Because I'm a Buddhist, I don't want to break my precept. I don't want to have any sexual intercourse with other people except my wife. Okay. So, sister, he said, "Can you help me?" I try. I say, "Why not you contemplate skeleton meditation? Skeleton. You take skeleton or you go online, internet online, find a skeleton. But I feel that the online skeleton is too beautiful, very shining, which is not so suitable. In my monastery, we have real skeleton and become rotten day by day. So it's very repulsive, very, very repulsive." So I asked him to contemplate the repulsiveness of skeleton. I say, try to find a skeleton which is repulsive, then keep it in the mind. Then contemplate it. Repulsiveness, repulsiveness, skeleton, skeleton, repulsiveness, repulsiveness. Until when you close your eye, the repulsiveness of skeleton appear in your mind. Then you will be successful. So I teach him this technique. But in my heart, I don't think he will follow my instruction. But as a nun, I have to share my knowledge, right? People come to ask help from me, I have to share. After 2 years, I met him again. Amazingly, he told me that, he said, "Sister, I have followed what you have taught me. I practice very hard. Skeleton meditation. So now, when I go to a barber shop to cut my hair, when a beautiful hairstylist moving in front of me, then I project my skeleton on their body." I project the skeleton on their body, and what I see, only skeleton moving around. I do not see hairstylist anymore. Therefore, now going to a barber shop to cut my hair is very enjoyable. I don't suffer from lust anymore. This is what he told me, real experience. Therefore, when the lust arises in you, you also can try skeleton meditation or 32 part to dispel it and make an end of it and annihilate it. Okay. How about the second one? If the thought of ill will that has arisen in a person, how can you abandon it, dispel it, and makes an end of it? I know many of you will encounter this aversion in the mind. So when the aversion arises in you, how you dispel it? Metta. Good. Some other people? How you dispel the aversion that arises in you?
Come back to the breath.
Reflect cause and effect. Yes. Yeah. So there are many ways to dispel it. One of them is metta, but not everybody can do it. When the mind is so angry, you want to send loving kindness to this person who annoy you, it's not easy. But if you fail, you have to try other way. Contemplate cause and effect. And also try to see aversion is not a self. It's not my aversion. It's cause and effect. See cause and effect relationship and develop equanimity toward your emotion. And Buddha said that the thought of ill will arises because you see it as repulsive. Sensual desire arises because you see it as beautiful. But thought of ill will arises because you see it as repulsive. Another person, you don't like him because you see it as unpleasant. So in order to overcome this ill will, you have to use opposite state. Try to see this person's pleasantness and try to have loving kindness and compassion to this person. And in Vitakka Santana Sutta, Buddha mentioned five ways to dispel all the hindrances in the mind, like sensual desire, ill will, or any other evil states of mind. The first one is to transform your mind by looking at the opposite state. Let's say hatred, then the opposite state of hatred is loving kindness. Sensual desire, when we desire, then we try repulsiveness. Try the opposite state. And if this fails, then Buddha said, Try to reflect the danger of that unwholesome thoughts. They say now you get very angry. Try to see the danger of the anger. If I now get very angry, if I die at this moment, then I'm going to unhappy destination. Try to see the anger. Then if this one aspect, another aspect is, if I get angry very often, it become my second nature. Then it become more difficult to get it off. So this way, by seeing the danger of any unskillful mental state, then you are ready to give it up. Okay. But if this is not successful, Buddha give a third way. He say, ignore it. Ignore that emotion, aversion, sensual desire, agitation, anxiety, worry. Ignore it. Don't pay attention to it. And if this fails again, Buddha say, try to trace cause and effect. What are the causes that makes this emotion to arise? And solve the causes. If you solve the causes, the effect will disappear. But if this still fails, still not successful, then Buddha say, last way, Buddha say, you should place your tongue on top of the plate of the mouth and use the effort, strong effort, to beat down the unskillful mind with skillful mind. The last way Buddha teach you. So there are these five ways. You try to use one after another until you finally can dispel all the unskillful mental state that arise in you. Okay. So this is how a person, in order to successful, in order to be successful to dispel, annihilate all the evil states that hinder your process, effort is needed. Strong effort and skillful means. Skillful means are needed to help you to get rid of all the impurity of the mind. All these are hindrances that hinder your concentration as well as your wisdom. So you should not entertain, you should not give in to them. This is called contemplation of abandonment. Okay, so time is up. We should stop here. Any question? Yes.
Yeah, when you're talking about sensual desires, you repeatedly return to the idea of lust, but you also seem to suggest that we're talking about all the different sensual desires. So would you expand on that if you're also meaning, you know, desire for dessert, that kind of thing?
That if you, let's say, desire for dessert, if you, there's one way, very disgusting way, you take the food, put inside your mouth, chew, before you swallow, spit out. Spit out and see, you want to take it in again or not? That is the way you can disgust, you can remove your craving for the food. Okay, anything else you want to know? There are many ways, okay, the food and the sound, you know. And contemplate impermanent also.
So are we always trying to get into the neutral feeling and getting back to the object of concentration? That's the whole objective of not getting attracted, even not getting
by
aversion.
I mean your contemplation on
like
your breath.
The whole objective is to come back, you know, whenever any feelings of attraction comes, of feeling of repulsiveness comes.
Not regarding the breath.
Not regarding,
okay. Regarding the talk.
Like anything which
okay.
comes up in your
okay.
Then use this antidote to come back to the object of and maintain a neutral or just, but if you don't have any, so that's the whole reason, like try to maintain an object of concentration all the time.
Yes. Yes. If you can maintain the object of concentration all the time, your sense doors are guarded, then the feeling is not so strong. Even it arises very subtle, you know, unpleasant or pleasant, it's very subtle. It will not affect you. But if you do not keep your attention on this breath, and when you see a beautiful one, oh, you see it full focus, then defilements easily arise.
So in a practical aspect, like we cannot keep on focus or concentration, we are working, you know?
Yes.
Then how to apply in that regard, like to bring back whatever your subject is working?
No, when you are working, yes, you just pay full attention on your work. But when you are moving in the street, you know, go here and there, then you do not guard your eyes, then very easy, sense desire will arise in you. But when you are working on your work, you just fully absorbed in your work, then defilement also will not arise in you.
Like so very practical example, driving a car from one point to another point, and you're going, and just be on guard as well, as because you're going to drive and you're going to see across all the things. So these are the
you just take care of your safety and drive your car. Don't admire this lady, that lady, this woman, that woman. Okay.
Do you mind giving a specific example of the tracing the cause and effect?
This is a bit difficult one, but I will try. Let's say, let's say you open a newspaper, you see, oh, there's earthquake happened somewhere. There are many people die, so you feel very pitiful to those victims. Okay, then second day, then you feel that one of your friends is one of the victims, die in the earthquake. So you feel now your feeling is stronger than yesterday. Now this the dead person is your friend. Then third day you discovered one of your relatives is dead. Then this time you have even stronger feelings. So try to examine why different people's death cause you different types of feelings. This is called examine cause and effect. Oh, then you know our relative die, we have stronger feeling because of our attachment, right? Our attachment to our relatives that cause us suffering. So you analyze why I feel suffer, why I didn't feel suffer in the first day, in the second day, but why I feel suffering, strong suffering now. Then you analyze, it because of my attachment to my relative that caused me suffering. Then you work on your attachment. Don't work on your suffering, work on your attachment. So when the cause ceases, then suffering will come to the end. That's called working on cause and effect. Okay? Any other question? Okay, yes.
Coming back to the neutral feeling and avoiding sensual desires and insecurity.
Mm-hmm.
Now you made a distinction between laypersons and monks.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So as a layperson, I have my partner.
Mm.
Now, if sensual desire is an impurity, it is an impurity even regarding my partner.
I didn't say that.
Is it?
I didn't say that. Okay. I said that except, just like I say the minister, you know, he didn't want to have any sexual intercourse except his wife. So, you are a lay person, of course. You can have sensual desire with your wife.
But it's a distraction. So does it mean that lay people cannot, that it's a disadvantage that lay people have progressing on this path?
Hmm.
So that we can only go so further and not further than that?
You mean not
on
having...
On the spiritual path, on the Buddhist path. Because, let's say, what you're saying I understand,
mm-mm.
that I am not breaking a rule or a precept.
Mm-mm.
However, even with my partner,
mm-mm.
it is a distraction.
Yes.
And so it's a hindrance.
Yes.
And so laypersons will therefore, at least for a long time, suffer a hindrance, which really, to get rid of that hindrance, one should become an ascetic, a monk or a nun.
You might be less distracted than the monk.
I may be less distracted
than the monk yet.
But that's a difference. I understand that.
If you let's say when you practice meditation, you know, and when your insight is very matured, you know, if you fortunate very luckily attain the third stage we call non-returner, then you have no more sensual desire for anyone, including your wife. This takes long time to come, but it is possible. Another way that then sign agreement with your wife. You can control, no? If both of you come to same agreement without any sense, then it's good. This part you got to handle yourself. I don't know how to advise you. Okay.
Where I'm sitting right now, I can see the dogwood outside the window. And
the dog?
Dogwood.
Dogwood.
Flowers.
The white
flowers.
Flowers.
Okay.
And spring is beautiful. And I love watching the trees unfold and open up. And I love the rain.
Mm.
And I've loved walking in the rain.
Mm.
And the sound of the rain.
Mm.
So am I attached to beauty?
Not during retreat. Out of retreat, okay, no problem. Because you're a layperson, how can you give up everything? Not possible, right? So you can attach to the rain, to the flower. This is not so harmful. Not so harmful. But during the retreat, put aside first. When you go back home, you can, you know, admire the nature. It's no fault. Not harmful, no fault. Okay? Yes?
I'm happy to hear she's attached to the rain because I have a major aversion to it. So I think I'll try a little attachment as a way of getting over
it. Okay.
As we're working to eradicate the kilesas, back to his question, is the goal that the things that the senses come in contact with will become neutral, or the feeling tone will become neutral, or is it just that our minds are developing equanimity?
Not clear. Say that again.
His question about neutral.
Yes.
He was asking. I have a second. Mm. Is that the goal? Is it so that I'm working with things that I was attached to before, with my eyes or my ears, and suddenly I'm not so attached.
Mm.
Things that I was averse to before, as the longer that I practice, I'm not.
Yes.
Is it that
this is progressing? This is progressing. Yes.
Is it that the feeling tone is changing and becoming neutral?
No.
Is it that my mind is...
Your mind.
Okay.
Because your mind... Because you already developed your mind to a certain degree, so what you like before now become more neutral. It means that your attachment to what you like has lessened. Therefore, the feeling become neutral. The mind change caused the feeling change.
So they both change?
Yes. This is called development of the mind.
But first is the mind.
Yes.
So what was pleasant is now neutral.
Yes. Because the mind has changed. Therefore, the feeling also changed.
But on that, so like for an arahant, a pleasant object is still going to be pleasant. And an unpleasant object is still going to be unpleasant.
Hmm.
You know, they're still going to see, you know, dog feces on the ground, and it's going to be unpleasant.
Mm.
They're going to see the dogwood tree, and it's still going to be pleasant for them, but just as it would for anyone. So the object is pleasant or unpleasant, right? And the feeling will arise as pleasant or unpleasant, but then they just don't jump to craving.
Yes, it is also true, but for Arahan, you know, for ordinary person, when we experience something unpleasant, then it activates the latent tendency of aversion. It almost automatically. But for Arahant, he experiences pleasant feeling, he does not attach. He experiences unpleasant feeling, he does not attach. So the problem is that attachment. Just like I said yesterday, eye is not a fetter for visible object, visible object is not a fetter for the eyes. The last is the fetter. Similarly, whatever you experience, if you have no last, then even pleasant feeling to you is not very pleasant too. No? Unpleasant feeling to you is not very unpleasant too. So almost come to neutral feeling. Not like you experienced before. When the mind is developed, what you experience pleasant, now you turn to become neutral.
Sorry, just to continue. So when they, when they're coming in contact with, you know, the same objects that we're coming in contact with,
with the layperson or
as opposed to, you know, globally, they're coming in contact with the same objects, and the same objects have probably the same feeling tone to them. For, I mean, other than, you know, some people might have developed aversion to a pleasant object for whatever reason, but for the most part, pleasant objects are going to have a pleasant feeling for everyone. So you're saying for them, the pleasure, the pleasantness of the object won't be as pleasant, it'll be more neutral, or that their response will be equanimity rather than...
I think the physical body sensation can be very pleasant, but the mind, I think the mind is not very pleasant. The mind does not important. When the mind does not attach to it, then it doesn't appear very pleasant. It appear more equanimous. In fact, equanimous is very, For example, fourth jhana. Fourth jhana, the third jhana has happiness, and Buddha say the happiness in the third jhana surpass all mundane happiness. But the fourth jhana equanimity is even highest. So he experienced highest one, not like, not the gross type. So equanimity can be very pleasant, can be very soothing, rather than that type of happiness. You understand?
Yeah, I guess it's just when you, I mean, you know, not that there are arhats, but when maybe really realized beings describe their experience of reality, you know, like, it's more intense.
Like for like, ordinary person?
Well, I don't know, like, when, like, someone who, they might, like, they might experience the colors of flowers, or they might experience nature, and it's more vibrant to them because they're so in the moment, they're so experiencing things without delusion, that actually the beauty is more beautiful. So I just, I guess I'm just interested to...
I think when you reach Arahant, you know better. I think we should stop here. Okay. Okay, last question. Okay.
No, I was just going to add, but and maybe it's a progression. I mean, as a person progresses, the intensity of experience, as the person becomes more advanced on the path, increases. It's not the comparison between no arhat and arhat, but also in between you can see that progression of the intensity of feeling in this world happening to that person.
I think the most beautiful experience is you admire the rain, you admire the flower, and you don't attach to it. That is the most beautiful experience. Okay, thank you.